right or not, that's what we are going to do. So here we are, and we're going to look this morning at Daniel, and we're going to look at his uncommon courage. This talk came out of a series that we've been doing at The Forge. It's based on a book called The Story. Some of you will be familiar with it. It's the NIV Bible, but it's been put together in chronological order. So it starts with creation, but then quickly drops into Job before you get on to Abraham. And it's been really interesting. We're, I think this morning, we're one before Jesus' resurrection, and we've been going for a year. We thought we could do it in a year with some gaps in between. We've failed. We're going to do the Acts of the Apostles and the letters and Revelation, I think, in February, and then we will be finished. It's quite a good read if you fancy getting hold of a copy. It does miss out some of the duller bits of the Bible, if I'm allowed to call them that, the bits that sometimes it's a struggle to read through. So I'm not suggesting they're not important, but it is interesting to have a version of the Bible that's in chronological order and misses those out. And it's been really exciting for us. And Daniel came after we'd been looking at the prophets Isaiah and Jeremiah. And Jeremiah had been saying to the people of God that what we saw there was, if you want to know what my plan is for your life, listen. If you want to know what God's plan is for your life, listen. And after that, we came into Daniel. One of the ways that Anne, my wife, and I serve at The Forge is to be on the breakfast team. If you know anything about The Forge, we don't have our own building, which means that at our Debenham location, we use the leisure centre, and we have a team that starts work about 7:15 on a Sunday morning to get everything set up. Set up for the adults, set up for the young people, set up for the kids. The band will also practice, so all the people who are involved in actually delivering the service are there as well. They get together, and we thought a good thing to do would be to give them breakfast when they get together. We're part of the team that does that. And part of the job of that team is if there are any leaders who are waiting in the building next door to welcome the children who are in need of a cup of coffee, then our job is to provide it. And I went over there with my piece of paper and a pen to take a note of who was there, whether they'd like a coffee, whether they wanted it white or black, whether they wanted sugar or sweetener, and believe me, we have everything, or whether they wanted tea, and if it was tea, is it weak or is it strong? Does it have milk? Ah, the list is endless. I always have a piece of paper. And I walked in where the kids were, and oh, there were two children there. What a shock. So I said, hi, and walked past. Now, what I should have done is stopped and said, hi, I'm Neil. Who are you? And where are you going? And what are you looking for? Oh, okay, so you normally go to that age group. There's no one here from that age group at the moment, so let me take you in and find you someone that you can be safely with until the person that you're waiting for turns up. But I didn't. I didn't do the right thing. Now, that's a bit of a trivial example. But isn't that common to our experience, that we miss opportunities, or when an opportunity comes, instead of doing the right thing, we do the wrong thing, or we just don't do the right thing? And I found myself asking, so why didn't I do the right thing? And the conclusion I came to is I didn't do the right thing on that occasion because I hadn't planned ahead to do the right thing. And all that would have meant was getting myself into a frame of mind that I'm going into where the kids meet, so I might find some kids there. I mean, it wasn't a shock, really, that there were kids there. And if one of the leaders has been held up on the way, There's a lot of water main replacement going on in our part of Suffolk, I can tell you. So if someone had been held up, it wouldn't have been at all surprising. And if that happens, I know what the Forges' approach to safeguarding and children is, so it would be my job to take the responsibility on myself and make sure that those children weren't left wandering around, but were connected with whoever was leading their group. If I'd had that thought, if I'd planned in advance to do it, I think I would have done better. Does that ring a bell? Missed opportunities, failing to do the right thing. Hold on to that story, because hold on to that thought, because it's a great segue into the story of Daniel. Daniel's story came after Jeremiah's story when we looked at it. Jeremiah had said, to discover God's plan for our life, we need to listen to his directions. If we are listening to God's directions for our life, it's going to take uncommon courage for us to follow those directions and to go through with it. To follow God's plan for our life requires uncommon courage. I'm going to tell you a story, and I'm going to say right at the beginning, I really wish this story was true. I don't think it is, but I really wish it was. The story goes like this. A young police officer was taking his final exam at Hendon Police College in North London, and he came to this question. It read, "You're on patrol in London when an explosion occurs in a gas main in a nearby street. On investigation, you find that a large hole has been blown in the footpath and there's an overturned van lying nearby. Inside the van, there is a strong smell of alcohol. Both occupants, a man and a woman, are injured. You recognize the woman as the wife of your chief inspector, who is at present away on a conference in the USA. A passing motorist stops to offer you assistance, and you realize that he's a man who is wanted for a series of violent armed robberies. Just at that moment, a man runs from a nearby house, shouting that his wife is expecting a baby and that the shock of the explosion has made the birth imminent. Another man is crying for help, having been thrown by the blast into a canal, and he can't swim. Bearing in mind the provisions of the Mental Health Act, the Police and Criminal Evidence Act, describe in a few words what action you would take." The young officer thought for a moment and wrote, "I would take off my uniform and mingle with the crowd." I really wish that was true. The big idea of Daniel is that if we're going to follow God's plan for our life, we can't take off our uniform and mingle with the crowd. If we determine to follow God's plan for our life, we can't take off our uniform and mingle with the crowd. God's plan will mean thinking differently to how other people think. Following God's plan will be mean doing differently to what other people are doing. And as a result, we will stand out from the crowd. We will need to swim against the tide, and that will take uncommon courage. Uncommon courage, such as we see in Daniel's story. The story of Daniel starts about 600 years before Jesus was born, so about 2,600 years ago. Daniel is young, probably about 16. He's good-looking, he's strong, he's teachable, he's talented. He's from a good family. He will go far. Good grades, good degree, a job in the city, shiny cars, a glamorous wife, 2.4 children, a dream house on Henley Road. I don't know where dream houses are in Ipswich these days. Henley Road, Valley Road. Maybe I'm just aging myself. I really don't know. But you get the idea. And yet Daniel's life didn't turn out like that. Daniel's life was one of so many lives that have been changed, turned upside down by chaotic events completely outside of his control. Daniel lives in Judah, a tiny kingdom. And in 605 BC, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, attacks and conquers Judah, and Daniel, along with thousands of others, is carried away from Judah to Babylon, modern-day Iraq. And I can only imagine what that would have felt like. I get homesick. I understand it. I would have been in pieces in those circumstances. Everything familiar left behind. Facing a future that, yeah, was potentially exciting, but a future in a foreign place where everything was different from what we'd left behind. Facing a future in a foreign country known for its decadence, its sexualization, and its immorality. So it's interesting then how Daniel's story starts. And this is from Daniel chapter 1. Then the king ordered Ashpenaz, chief of his court officials, to bring into the king's service some of the Israelites from the royal family and the nobility, young men without any physical defect, handsome, showing aptitude for every kind of learning, well-informed, quick to understand, and qualified to serve in the king's palace. He was to teach them the language and the literature of the Babylonians. The king assigned them a daily amount of food and wine from the king's table. They were to be trained for 3 years, and after that they were to enter the king's service. Among those who were chosen were some from Judah: Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, Azariah. The chief official gave them new names: to Daniel the name Belteshazzar, to Hananiah Shadrach, to Mishael Meshach, and to Azariah Abednego. King Nebuchadnezzar has a cunning plan. He will take the brightest and the most influential young people from Judah. He'll educate them in the language and the literature of the Babylonians. And they will learn to look like Babylonians. They'll learn to talk like Babylonians. They'll learn to think like Babylonians. They will learn to be Babylonian in all but birth. And they will serve the king of Babylon. And they will never become a focus from discontent back in Judah, far away. It's a great plan. And it's here that we first see Daniel 16, remember? We first see Daniel's uncommon courage. This was a fantastic opportunity. Along with the learning and career prospects came the opportunity to eat and to drink of the very best. This was not Tesco value. This was probably better than Tesco finest. This was the real thing. A fabulous opportunity. And hey, none of the normal checks and balances. No parents to kick you under the table or give you the eye if you're overstepping the mark. If they think that's one glass of wine too many. If they think you could do without a third helping of trifle. No society to put the brakes on your excess. You are the chosen few. You are living and studying and eating and drinking in the king's palace. You're part of the court. But the story, the narrative, the text goes on that Daniel resolved not to defile himself with royal food and wine and asked the chief official for permission not to defile himself in this way. Daniel didn't miss what was going on here. He was clearly convinced he shouldn't dive into this particular all-you-can-eat buffet. We're not told exactly why. It could be he simply wanted to stay healthy and knew that a rich diet wouldn't help him do that. It could be he wanted to stay alert and knew that drinking lots of wine wouldn't help him to do that. Most likely, the food and drink that was set on the king's table had been offered to pagan idols, and Daniel didn't want to be part of that. As I say, we're not told the reason, but whatever the reason was, Daniel was convinced that he shouldn't, and he makes a stand. All this was going on. He doesn't miss what's going on, and he doesn't miss the opportunity to take a stand. Why didn't he just see everyone else diving in and think, well, hey, this is great, I'm going to go for it, maybe only to regret it later? Why didn't he miss the opportunity? I think it's because he saw the situation coming and he made an advanced decision how he was going to react. I think that's what the text means when it says Daniel resolved not to defile himself. So Daniel asks the chief official if they can have other food to eat. That puts the official in a bit of a panic. If these young men don't eat and drink like the rest and end up undernourished and weak as a result, that will reflect badly on him, the chief official, and he could get the chop. And in those days, if you got the chop, you really got the chop. That was how it worked. And Daniel, it seems, is sympathetic. Okay, he says, let's just do a trial. Let us eat vegetables and drink water for 10 days. And if at the end of that, we're starting to show the signs of a poor diet, fine, we'll think again. And the official agrees. And the text tells us that at the end of 10 days, they looked healthier and better nourished than any of the young men who ate the royal food. At the end of the 10 days, Daniel and his chums are actually looking better than the ones eating meat and drinking wine. To follow God's plan for our life requires uncommon courage. Uncommon courage begins with an advance decision. To follow God's plan for our life requires uncommon courage. This could have gone really badly for Daniel and his buddies. Uncommon courage begins with an advanced decision. Put that another way, courageous people make decisions ahead of time. Daniel thought through what might happen and he went in prepared. He made a decision in advance that he would not defile himself. Up until now, Daniel's life had been decided for him by the Babylonians. That's why he was where he was. That's why he'd been chosen to do what he was now doing. He was in a new place, in a new culture. He had a new name. He could easily have gone with the flow. After all, I'm 500 miles from home, and home is probably not even there anymore. Why don't I just get on with it? But Daniel resolved. I may be 500 miles from home. My surroundings may be completely foreign to me. I have a new name. I have a new future. But I know who I am. I'm a treasured child of the one true God. I believe that. And I resolve to live for that God and not get sucked into the values of the culture I'm living in. If we're going to be Christ followers, Christians, we need extraordinary courage. And to show that kind of courage, we need to decide in advance what we value. Before the good-looking bloke in sales starts flirting with you, you need to decide in advance that you will honor your commitment to your husband. Before you start private messaging your secret friend your wife doesn't know about, you need to draw a line ahead of time that says there will be no secret friends. And that's tough. Daniel resolved on his way to Babylon that he was going to honor God with his life, whatever came his way. And when stuff came his way, he dealt with it courageously because he decided in advance to do it. Following God's plan for your life takes uncommon courage. Uncommon courage makes decisions ahead of time. So Daniel ends his 3 years studying at the top of the class. He's interviewed personally by the king, and he becomes a respected advisor to the king. Actually, not just to the king, but to 4 kings of Babylon. It's genuinely a gripping story, and if you haven't done it recently, I'd really encourage you to read it, Daniel 1 to 6. You could manage that at one sitting, even if you're not very good at reading. Daniel's uncommon courage creates a remarkable reputation. When we start his story, he's about 16. We're just going to pick it up again in the reign of the 4th of those kings. And Daniel, by this time, is in his 80s. Despite the ups and the downs, and there have been some big ups and some big downs, things seem to have gone well for Daniel. He's reached old age. That's no mean feat, and was no mean feat in those days. He is still healthy, and he is still filled with energy, and he's still working. Wow. He's in charge of 1/3 of the kingdom, and the new king, Darius, is so impressed with Daniel, he wants to put him in charge of the whole kingdom. This story is in Daniel 6. Daniel so distinguished himself among the administrators and the provincial governors by his exceptional qualities that the king planned to set him over the whole kingdom. At this, the administrators and provincial governors tried to find grounds for charges against Daniel in his conduct of government affairs, but they were unable to do so. Do you get the picture? The king wants to put him in charge of the whole kingdom, and the people who are already in charge of bits of the kingdom don't want that to happen. We're not told why. Perhaps the honesty of Daniel is a threat to their dishonesty. Perhaps the hard-working attitude of Daniel threatens their afternoons on the golf course. When they hear he may become the boss over all of them, they want to stop it. So they start looking at Facebook, and they start looking at the newspaper reports, and they go to the Public Accounts Committee records to try and find something that Daniel has done wrong, something that they can leak, which will discredit him and mean that his appointment doesn't go ahead. But, and this is truly amazing, they find nothing. Nothing. They could find no corruption in him because he was trustworthy and neither corrupt nor negligent. There's a worrying American trend in language. I don't know if you've picked it up, but it's to put super in front of everything. So things are super cool or things are super important. I hate it. But this is super remarkable. This really is super remarkable. They could find no corruption in him because he was trustworthy and neither corrupt nor negligent. And you know, I found myself wondering whether I could take Daniel out of that sentence and put my name in there instead. They could find no corruption in Neil Sargent because he was trustworthy and neither corrupt nor negligent. And I decided that's a really tough ask. Could you take Daniel out of that sentence and put your name there instead? They could find no corruption in because she or he was trustworthy and neither corrupt nor negligent. That takes uncommon courage to step back from fiddling your expenses, not to overcharge your customers for jobs, to pay your bills on time, every time, to do what you say you'll do, when you say you'll do it. Following God's plan for your life takes uncommon courage, and uncommon courage requires an advanced decision, because as we saw at the beginning of the story, following God's plan puts you in the firing line. And right here, right now, this is putting Daniel in the firing line. To summarize, Daniel's colleagues come up with a plan to trap him. They can't find any legitimate dirt on him. And so they persuade the king, and to be honest, I don't think it took very much persuading, to issue a law that everyone must pray to the king and pray only to the king. If anyone refuses, they become lion food. And Daniel refuses. He's in his 80s. You'd think life would let up on him. Those of you who are in your 80s know that that never happens. It doesn't happen. When Daniel learned that the decree had been published, he went home to his upstairs room where the windows opened towards Jerusalem. Three times a day he got down on his knees and prayed, giving thanks to God just as he had done before. Daniel's not awkward. He doesn't go home and do something to fly in the face of what the king has said just because the king has said it. No, this is what Daniel normally did, just as he always did. This was what he did. He prayed three times a day to God, and he continued to pray three times a day to God. Daniel was authentic. Daniel was real. He was true. It was his custom, and he carried on doing it even when to do it meant death. Jesus used a word to describe people who say one thing and do something else. The word he used was hypocrites. That comes from the Greek stage, where actors would wear a mask. And when they wore the mask, they were the character. And when they took the mask off, they were themselves. I can put a mask on and look like someone else, but actually I'm really me. I can put a mask on and look like a Christian when you see me, and when you don't see me, I can be someone very different. I look like a Christian when I'm at church, but when I'm at work or when I'm at home, it's very different. It takes uncommon courage and an advanced decision for who you are on the outside and who you are on the inside to be consistent. It takes uncommon courage and an advanced decision not to be someone who's very spiritual in their small group and rather gossipy and devious when they're at work. It's one or the other. Either you're the same person wherever you are, or you're a hypocrite. And if you're going to be the same person wherever you are, that's going to take uncommon courage, and you're going to have to decide things in advance. So Daniel is true to himself, and Daniel is true to God, and Darius, rather reluctantly, decides to feed him with the lions, to the lions. And we'll finish in a moment with what happens, but before that, I'd like just to invite you to hit pause. What is it from what we've been thinking about this morning that you need to do something with? What is it that you need to do something with? Is there a situation coming up where you're going to be under pressure to do or say something you know you'll regret? Then name it and decide now that you won't let yourself get into that situation, or that you won't do or say that thing. Where do you need to show uncommon courage, and what decision will you make now in advance? Or as we hit pause, is the issue for you your integrity? Do you know in truth that you couldn't put your name into that sentence? So then where do you need to show uncommon courage? What advanced decision will you make? So we could have a big drum roll at this point. We could go all Technicolor and CGI with lions and Daniel. I think there's real power in the way that the text records the story because it's so understated. And I thought we'd finish just by reading it together. So the king gave the order, and they brought Daniel and threw him into the lion's den. The king said to Daniel, "May your God, whom you continually serve, rescue you." Then the king returned to his palace and spent the night without eating and without any entertainment. He could not sleep. At the first light of dawn, the king got up and hurried to the lion's den. When he came near the den, he called to Daniel in an anguished voice, "Daniel, servant of the living God, has your God, whom you serve continually, been able to rescue you from the lions?" Daniel answered, "May the king live forever. My God sent his angel, and he shut the mouth of the lions. They have not hurt me, because I was found innocent in his sight, nor have I ever done any wrong before you, your majesty." We're going to leave it there. We're going to sing our closing song. We'll stand to do that. And when we've done that, we'll stay standing and just finish with a prayer.